Hard Feelings by Mark Coggins is a bang bang thrill ride, says best-selling author Seth Harwood, who adds that the lead character of Winnie is a female Jack Reacher. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 4. Winnie. Winnie helped Reardon pull the bodies from the front of the trailer to a dark corner of the second carport behind the covered auto. They searched both men, finding a set of rental car keys on the shorter one and another taser and a 9mm automatic on the taller. Neither had a wallet or ID of any sort. "What's with all the tasers?" asked Reardon, holding the stubby weapon to the light. "They have their reasons. One I already told you. They want me alive. Also, guns aren't the best thing to use against me unless you get a headshot. I don't feel the shock and pain of being hit, so I might just keep coming at you until I bleed out."
"Glad you can be so dispassionate about it."
She ignored his comment.
"And although I've never been jolted with one, I'm sure a taser would completely scramble the signals from the transceiver. It would probably affect me more than it would a normal person."
Reardon shrugged and flipped the taser onto the stomach of the shorter man. He nudged the body with his toe.
"And you were planning to get rid of them how?"
"You're the local."
"Yes, I'm the local. That means I can tell you where to get a tasty margarita or a good deal on tires. It doesn't mean I am familiar with popular body dumping grounds."
"Get creative. Exercise your right brain a little."
"Let me see the car keys."
She passed them over, and Reardon examined the handwritten tag from the rental car company.
"Okay, come with me. I'll bet I know where they're parked."
"Your famous visitor's lot?"
"You got it."
She followed him on a circuitous route through the trailer park, sometimes crunching through the gravel yards of other residents, sometimes walking along darkened streets. The place seemed almost completely deserted. At the back of the complex, a road descended to a swale of unpaved desert with a few parking places marked with white rocks. Her Lincoln was there, lodged in front of a saguaro cactus that had been maimed repeatedly with a .22 rifle. Beside the Lincoln was a white van. Reardon pressed the clicker on the key fob. The van chirped in response, and its door locks flicked open.
"Open sesame," he said.
Standing at his shoulder, she watched as he pulled the driver's door open and looked inside. There was nothing remarkable in the passenger area, but when they walked around to the back and opened the cargo door, they found a mattress on the floor and two pairs of handcuffs locked around metal tie-down loops.
"Your intended home away from home," he said.
She nodded, then reached to take hold of a large duffel bag that was lying on top of the mattress. She pulled it in range and yanked down the zipper. Inside, she found two pump-action shotguns, another 9mm automatic, ammunition for both, duct tape, several sets of plastic cuffs, two pairs of military-grade night vision goggles, two body armor vests, and still more tasers. There was also a leather case containing three hypodermic syringes loaded with a cloudy liquid. Reardon whistled.
"All the party fixin's," he said, scratching his armpit reflectively. "Wonder what the hypos are loaded with."
"Probably some kind of horse tranquilizer."
Winnie picked up one of the automatics and squinted at the markings on the slide.
"Numbers have been filed off."
He took the gun from her and checked the other places where the serial numbers would be stamped.
Yeah, every one of them. He returned it and fished out a vest, holding it out for them to examine. Hmm, what's that say? She leaned in. She could barely make out an insignia printed in gold ink, a tiny fortress with text jutting over the top. Praetorian. Sounds familiar. Ring any bells for you? It did sound familiar, but apart from the association with ancient Rome, Winnie couldn't place it either.
No, she snapped, and I don't care if it says Fisher Price Toys. We can use it, all of it.
Use it how? To start World War III?
If we have to. Now, what was your idea with the van? We put the bodies in the back and...
He threw down the vest. And drive it to the North 40 of the long-term parking lot at the airport. They won't open it for weeks, and if we're careful about wiping everything down, they won't be able to tie it to us when they do.
You almost sound like you've done this before.
No comment. Reardon got behind the wheel of the van, and Winnie got in the Lincoln. They drove to his trailer, where he backed the van up close to the bumper of his old car to block the view from the street. They loaded the bodies in the cargo area, wiped the van down, and stowed the duffel bag in the trunk of his car. Then they caravanned out to the airport, where she waited in the cell phone lot while Reardon went to the long-term one. Before leaving the trailer, he had put on a baseball cap and pulled a hoodie over it. She realized he was worried about cameras at the entrance of the long-term lot and was pleasantly surprised that he had the presence of mind to obscure his appearance. Winnie had been waiting in the cell phone lot for less than 20 minutes when she saw him ambling through the forest of sodium vapor lamps in the lot like an overgrown gangbanger. He nodded at her when he saw the car and went around to the passenger door.
Any problems?
She asked once he was seated beside her. He shook his head and pulled off the long rubber gloves he'd been wearing. Except the damn gloves. They stink of Lysol. She laughed.
If you were a proper criminal, you wouldn't have to make do with the gloves you used to clean the toilet.
I'll take that as a compliment. You hungry? I never had dinner, and we can talk while we eat. She realized she hadn't eaten herself since breakfast. She glanced at the Lincoln's dashboard clock. It was 11:20.
I'm game. Is there anything open? Or are you proposing to cook something?
I'm proposing to let a guy named Denny cook something. He works 24/7.
Delightful.
He directed her to a Denny's about 3 miles west of the airport. They got a booth in the back and ordered from a gum-chewing waitress who appeared to be obscuring a tattoo on her neck with heavy makeup. Reardon ordered a chicken-fried steak. Hoping for the best, Winnie got something called tilapia ranchero. She knew it was crazy to order fish at a Denny's this far inland, but she was careful about what she ate and didn't want to pollute her body with red meat or fried food. Reardon had pulled the hoodie off his head. Now he removed the baseball cap and took off the sweatshirt. After brushing his hair back in place, he leaned back in the booth and regarded her. He wasn't an entirely unattractive man. Not that his looks had anything to do with what they had to do next. You said you came to me for help, he started. Then you mentioned something about starting a war with that cache of weapons we found. What exactly do you have in mind?
She snorted. Isn't it obvious after tonight? We need to help each other stay alive and keep out of the backs of vans.
Okay, but I get the definite sense you have something more offensive than defensive in mind. We could stay alive by moving to Tahiti.
If that's a proposition, I'll pass. Yes, I need your help with more than just running away. The first thing is something that has to do with me, with my particular situation.
She explained about the problems she'd been having with the transceiver.
I need a way to get it fixed, but I can't risk making the problem worse or breaking the transceiver entirely.
That is a problem, But you don't expect me to open it up and attempt surgery, do you? I can barely replace a battery on my cell phone. Winnie did have some idea that Reardon could at least take a peek inside to look for obvious loose wires. She brought her hand to the back of her neck and squeezed. It was one of the few places in her body where she had any sensation, and the muscles were tied in knots.
I at least need you to pull guard duty while someone else looks at it. I can't risk losing my ability to move without a protector.
Sure.
And how about helping me to find someone to look at it?
Reardon hunched over his water glass, jockeying the ice cubes in the glass with his knife. What sort of person do we need? A digital computer expert? Palm Springs isn't exactly Silicon Valley, you know.
Thanks for the geography lesson. There is a computer chip with specialized firmware in the device, but it also contains a radio receiver and transmitter. I guess you could say it's a mix of digital and analog. Humans are analog after all, and the transceiver's ultimate purpose is to relay nerve impulses from my brain to my spine.
He set the knife back on the table and looked up at her. An impish smile came over his face, erasing about 10 years' worth of mileage. "Hey," he said. I know just the guy.
You have been listening to No Hard Feelings, a finalist for the Forward Reviews Book of the Year Award. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.